There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to College Football Live.
Would Nick Saban make the move to Tua Tagovailoa?
Fire to the end zone. Touchdown! Alabama wins!
The answer is simple. The starting quarterback is Tua.
Touchdown! Aloha!
Tua is college football's version of LeBron.
Tua is not getting up. This championship is for Jalen Hurts.
Tigers reclaim their crown by crushing Alabama.
The fact that Tua Tagovailoa is in the fold for Alabama is absolutely frightening.
Tua suffered a dislocated right hip. He is not expected to play again this season.
I hope this is not so serious that it has any long-term effect on his future.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to College Football Live with Greg McElroy and Tom Luganbill. I'm your host, Marty Smith, and we're going to start right there with Tua Tagovailoa's injury. He suffered a dislocation of his right hip on Saturday afternoon against Mississippi State. He had surgery on Monday morning in Houston, Texas. Doctors say his prognosis is excellent, and he's expected to be back in Tuscaloosa very soon to begin rehab. Here's what his head coach Nick Saban had to say about that injury earlier this week.
Look, I've talked to Tua. I feel bad. I'm hurting. All right, but so I call him on Saturday night to cheer him up. He cheers me up. I call him last night because I've been sitting in that room for 10 hours yesterday watching film. I call him to cheer him up. He cheers me up. So this is a guy that has great spirit. He's very positive about just about everything he does and the effect that he has on other people. I can think back to, you know, four or five players that actually truly could say, I really love those guys, you know, as people, the way they did things, the contribution that they made, how they affected other people. And, you know, Tua would be one of those four or five guys.
Alabama released a statement from the Tagovailoa family today, which stated, "We'd like to thank all the Alabama family and everyone across the world for the prayers and outpouring of love and support for our son and our family. We felt the unceasing prayer, and words cannot express how overwhelming and uplifting that's been for us. We have total faith in God's plan for Tua, and we know His plan is never wrong." Fellas, it's really difficult to quantify the impact that this young man has had on the University of Alabama program, its fan base, his coaches, us as journalists. We've all really gotten to know him well over the last few years and have great appreciation for him. So, Greg, I'll start with you on what's your general reaction to this injury?
It was sickening, the coverage of the injury on Saturday. When you actually look and thought about what transpired, I don't think any of us really knew the fullest extent of what the injury and the fact that injury would ultimately end his season. But in the aftermath, it was immediate focus on who should be the recipient of the blame. Nick Saban, oh, why is he playing? It's 35-7. Why is he playing? It felt like we had to blame someone for something that was relatively catastrophic and relatively freak. And I think instead of focusing so much on addressing the blame to a certain individual and forwarding a narrative that you personally feel, we should have spent a little bit more time focusing on the actual injury itself and on the person that was wearing the helmet underneath into a Tagovailoa. So I did not like the coverage at all on Saturday, both on social media and on television. And I hope moving forward when this event does happen again, we would cover it with a little bit more sincerity.
Well, let's look at the positive side, Greg. This is fixable. It's correctable. Now, there's going to be a long, arduous rehab involved in this. But the one thing I think we need to point out, because durability is going to come up as an issue with Tua Tagovailoa, but this is an extremely rare freak accident, freak injury. This is something that all we can do is reference, what? One player, Bo Jackson, 30 years ago. All right. And it's not even the same injury. So it's not as if this is something that is common. This is something that is unique. And it's time to move on as to the why it happened. Nobody knows the why. And I agree with you, Greg. You're in the first half. You're in a blowout. But it's the first half. You got to play.
Luke's, it's interesting because I think every one of us just made the assumption that Tua would come out after his third year this season, enter the NFL draft, and be a very high draft pick. Everyone knows about tanking for Tua and the entire narrative. But what do you believe this might mean for his future? You think this might mean a fourth year at Alabama for Tua?
I wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility. I think it's really premature to sit here and assume that he just up and declares for the NFL draft. There are unforeseen variables now that are in play here. And part of the pre-draft evaluation process, production, skill set, talent, all of that notwithstanding, is the perspective of durability. That's going to be heavily scrutinized. So if I'm Tua Tagovailoa and I'm his representatives and I'm his family members, I want to look at everything. I want everything on the table. Would it maybe benefit me to come back, play a fourth year, and prove that I have the durability to get through an entire season to continue to up my stock? I don't know. I think you'll find out a lot of information between now and when he's got to make that decision, Greg.
The one thing that I would say that makes this situation awfully unique is that we all know that Tua Tagovailoa is a first-round pick. It's a matter of, is he top 10? Is he top 5? Is he top 2? Is he number 1? Those are the questions that are going to be figured out. And more often than not, around the Alabama program, if you're a first-round pick, Nick Saban encourages you to go. He feels like that's the best opportunity to make sure that you cash in and maybe create generational wealth for yourself. But there was one aspect of Tua's decision that might make a slight difference. The fact that his brother, Talia Tagovailoa, is on the roster and will be vying for the starting quarterback spot when they have that open competition when Tua does in fact leave. So that's one aspect of it that I think people aren't really discussing, because if Tua were to decide to leave, that would open the door for Talia, who could potentially succeed him.
Tell you, Greg, if he does something like that, you talk about truly an unselfish player. That would be a remarkable decision, because you would not only just be making it for yourself, you'd truly be making it for somebody else. That would be something right. That I think would be substantial.
This young man has been transcendent on the grandest of stages in college football. We all know that. And now we wonder, what does this mean for the Alabama Crimson Tide as they progress forward in their season? Greg, what impact does losing Tua have on Alabama's opportunity to play for a national title?
See, I thought chances were slim to get to the college football playoff to begin with. So I would go out on a limb and say Tua's injury actually won't impact their ability if they're 11-1. Now, does it impact their ability to beat Auburn? Sure. I think the likelihood with Tua under center as opposed to Mac Jones, the opportunities to beat Auburn are probably significantly higher. So that's the one thing I would say. But as far as how the outlook is concerned, and we know that the College Football Playoff Committee does take into account injuries, I still think the chances of Alabama getting there were very slim. They would be completely at the mercy of what happens in both the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and the SEC championship game, because if Georgia were to beat LSU, LSU at 12-1 would still be ahead of Alabama. So I think it would have required the stars to align for Alabama to get in initially, even before the injury. But now I think that door is for the most part shut.
Well, and Greg, if the Pac-12 championship, whether it's Oregon or Utah, was not in play here, then maybe you have more of a likelihood, regardless of who the quarterback is for Alabama, if Alabama were to beat Auburn, then maybe there's more of a chance here for college football playoff inclusion. But you and I both saw Alabama take on Arkansas when Mac Jones was the starting quarterback for the entire game. Obviously, he played very, very well. They had a game plan tailored to his strengths to mask his weaknesses. But I think it's an entirely different animal going on the road versus your rival. I think this thing would be a tall order, not only for Mac Jones, but for Alabama. And even if you win the game, there's too many other external circumstances that have a negative impact on Alabama getting to the college football playoff.
Greg, I started this conversation by saying how difficult it is to quantify his impact on the Alabama program. You played in it. You played for Saban. You won a national championship within that program. You know it as well as anybody ever. How do you define what he is to Alabama football?
I think he's the greatest player of the Saban generation. I really believe that. And you think about the short list among quarterbacks, McCarron, obviously. Among running backs, you have two Heisman Trophy winners in Ingram and Henry. On defense, you have Rolando McClain, Dante Hightower, Jonathan Allen, incredible players. But if you think about what Alabama has shifted to and being the ground and pound, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, now to being an aerial assault that is going to put up 50 points a game, he's the reason for that change. And I think he has been as valuable to this program as any player has to any program in college football the last couple of years. Not only did he deliver a national championship in the second half of the game against Georgia a couple of years ago, he put up, I thought, a Heisman-worthy season last year, even though he finished as the runner-up. So he's a transcendent player for this program, and he means even more to those that have gotten a chance to get to know him.
Well, and to further illustrate that, Greg, no other moment in his Alabama career, I think, defines what he means to Alabama when your head coach at halftime of the national championship decides to play you as a true freshman in the second half and you end up winning the game.
Special young man, no doubt, and we're all thinking about you and praying for you, too. All right, guys, it's now time for the Capital One fan vote. Which of these teams is most likely to make the playoff? Is it Roll Tide, Georgia, Oklahoma, or Oregon? Here's what the fans think. You heard what the guys thought about Alabama earlier. Hear their thoughts on some of these other teams coming up after the break. Looks like you guys are in on Georgia. The Ohio State Buckeyes are looking to keep their perfect record intact this weekend as they host Penn State. The guys will tell us coming up what they have their eye on in this matchup.
College Football Live is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
This week's ultimate performance presented by BMW is Oklahoma quarterback Jalen Hurts. Boy, did he ball in the second half. Brought OU back from a 28-3 deficit by throwing for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns all in the second half. The 25-point comeback is the largest in program history. Tonight at 7 p.m. on ESPN and the ESPN app, we'll have this exclusive reveal of the next college football playoff top 25 rankings. Reese and the boys break it all down top to bottom, and Oregon head coach Mario Cristobal joins the show. Speaking of those Oregon Ducks, we're going to start right there and make your case for some of these potential college football playoff programs. Lugs, I'm going to give you the floor. Make your case for Oregon.
Well, I'm not as convinced that they're physically dominant like the 2014 Ohio State team that lost their opener as well to Virginia Tech, but I do know that the committee values improvement. They value how you play in the month of November. They've got a dynamic, healthy quarterback that can make throws all over the field. They have, I think, a sneaky good defense that has been undervalued and has gotten better each and every week. Now, they still got the Civil War in front of them. I would not devalue Oregon State. They're vastly improved. But if you go into the Pac-12 championship game and you beat a team like Utah, the way that Utah is built, I think there's pressure on the committee to put a Pac-12 champ in over another one-loss non-conference champ.
Now, I think Oregon's excellent, especially in the trenches, both offensively and defensively. What I like most is just how opportunistic they are. I mean, they are so good on the defensive side, forcing turnovers, and their offense doesn't make mistakes. And that's huge, especially in a big game environment. But what you just described, if they beat Utah.
Yeah.
What about Utah? Like, I feel like they're the one team that's lost in this whole conversation. And if you look, if there's two things I want on a championship caliber team, it's a quarterback that's playing excellent. Tyler Huntley, check that box because he's been very efficient both running the football and he's been throwing the ball better than he ever has at any point in his career over the last few games. And then I want a dominant defensive line. Those are, I think, the two biggest attributes to a championship contender. And guess what? Utah has both.
It.
So I love Oregon's offensive line. I think they're excellent. But I think that group can be neutralized because of the disruption that Utah can create on the defensive side. They're one of the most efficient teams in football, both offensively and defensively. So I think Utah is a team that's flying under the radar and just liking where they're at. And they will give Oregon all they want and some in the Pac-12 championship game.
You know what, Greg, when you look at the likes of a Clemson or Ohio State or an Alabama of the past, and then you look at Utah, what are the common denominators? Dominant trench play and quality play under center. That's what stands out about Utah. And that's why I think it's going to be the best Pac-12 championship game we've seen to date.
No doubt.
Very few.
Not even close.
Very few. very few players behind center are playing more dynamically than Jalen Hurts is. We just mentioned he's the BMW performer of the week. So what about Oklahoma? If they went out and have one loss, where do the Sooners stand, Greg?
I think they're in trouble, Marty. I really do. Because we can look at the remarkable comeback last week against Baylor and the comeback that nearly occurred against Kansas State. And why is it that they were in a 25-point hole to begin with? And by the way, why was it against Iowa State they had a commanding lead? And next thing you know, Iowa State's going for two to potentially upset Oklahoma in their own house. So there's really, really a difficult thing that I've tried to grapple with when evaluating Oklahoma. Their highs are remarkably high. I mean, they can score, they can defend, they can play really sound along the offensive line, and their skill is obviously excellent. And then there's other times where you're like, this defense is awful. Their quarterback is not playing very good with the decisions he's making, like Jalen Hurts played in the first half last week. Their offensive line is having a difficult time keeping guys in front of them. So I think they're too inconsistent at this point to let me think that they would jump either one of the two Pac-12 teams or even a one-loss non-conference champion that might be coming out of the Big Ten or the SEC.
Well, and Greg, the area that we pointed out as it relates to Utah is something that's deficient with Oregon. They're nowhere, or excuse me, with Oklahoma. They're nowhere near the team in the offensive line they've been the last 2 to 3 years. And I think defensively, while Alex Grinch has them playing hard, I think they've simplified things. I think their lack of depth as the season has worn on has started to catch up with them. And if you're going to really be in the hunt, I think you've got to be not only competent, but in at least one or two of those areas dominant, and Oklahoma is not right now.
To quote Kirby Smart, how about them bleep dogs? Georgia goes into Auburn and gets a huge victory, wins the SEC East. Where do you guys see the Bulldogs right now, Lukes?
I like them. I just like how they're built. And one of the things that stands out to me, we talked about offensive line play. We talked about defensive line play. An opportunistic team on defense. Now, listen, granted, you know, they've played a true receiver at quarterback when they beat Kentucky, all right? Outside of Kyle Trask at Florida, they really haven't played a competent, productive, consistent player at quarterback. I think that's enhanced Georgia's numbers. But they've got athletes. They've got depth. And I think Jake Fromm in the passing game, he is undervalued when he's counted upon. I think there's this notion that if you run the football well in early downs, you come off of play action, everything's great. But when they've had to throw it with him carrying the offense, I think he's more than answered the toll.
Yeah, the thing that I'd say, I would argue that Ian Book at Notre Dame was a pretty competent quarterback, and they held him in check and made some nice plays on the football that day. But I would agree with you, Luke, they haven't played anyone of the likes of Joe Burrow or Trevor Lawrence or anyone of that nature for sure. So I would agree with you to a certain extent on that. The thing that I'll say about Georgia is everyone says, well, no one can stop this LSU offense. Yeah, I mean, except Auburn, who held them to 23. And I would bet that Georgia's offense, especially the way they run the football and the way they can control the line of scrimmage offensively, I would think they're going to get their points against LSU, because if you look at LSU's rush defense, they're really struggling. So yeah. I think Georgia matches up excellent against LSU in an SEC championship game. I'd still favor the Tigers, but I would be surprised if Georgia got blown out in a setting like that. Their game experience and the championship pedigree exists.
Georgia beat Florida. They beat Auburn, and they beat Notre Dame when Notre Dame was really relevant. Not too bad a resume, gentlemen.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to Ohio State and Penn State. First look at the marquee game of the weekend coming up. We'll break this one down with the boys. Saturday, Justin Herbert and number 6 Oregon look to keep their college football playoff hopes alive against Herm Edwards' Sun Devils in Tempe. The Ducks have won 9 straight and have beaten Arizona State in 11 of the past 12 meetings. That's 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on ABC and the ESPN app.
College Football Live is brought to you by AT&T. This Heisman Update is brought to you by Nissan, premier partner of the Heisman Trophy.
And now a look at a Heisman update brought to you by Nissan. No Chase Young for the Buckeyes over the past 2 games, no problem. QB Justin Fields has been able to pick up all the slack. The signal caller has been responsible for 8 touchdowns in the 2 Ohio State wins over Maryland and Rutgers, and will have a great chance to bolster his resume in his next game this Saturday, which just happens to be our Wendy's Weekend Watch. Penn State headed into Columbus to take on the undefeated Buckeyes. Ohio State can clinch the Big Ten East Division with a win, but if Penn State wins on Saturday, then all that would be stopping them from a trip to the Big Ten title game would be their last opponent of the season, Rutgers. These are two really good football teams, guys. Ohio State, of course, undefeated. Greg, what stands out to you most about this matchup?
The return of Chase Young. Is he going to make up for lost time? I mean, he was as good as any player in college football in the first 8 games of the season. Of course, you had to go away because of the suspension for the last 2, but now he's back. And you got to think that he's going to be a little angry. Couple that with the fact that Sean Clifford, the quarterback for Penn State, has shown the last couple weeks the ability to escape the pocket, keep drives alive by using his legs. I think that's is going to be a really interesting game of cat and mouse. The pass rusher, how aggressive can you be against the quarterback that's shown himself to be very mobile? So that's going to be an interesting back and forth between those two great players.
Well, and Greg, if you're Penn State on the road, I think they've proven that they can run the ball, and they've got a slew of running backs to accomplish that task. But 2 things stand out for me. Number 1, regardless of whether or not KJ Hamler plays, they've got to start catching the football better. When you look at their season in the passing game, Sean Clifford's received a lot of criticism. He's had 29 dropped balls, and of those 29, 19 have come on passes of 10 yards or more. That's a lot of explosive plays that are lost in the passing game. So you got to be able to get better in that regard. And I think what you've also got to be able to do is he's got to get off to a fast start. The last 2 weeks for Penn State in this offense, they have struggled to get in rhythm early. You cannot afford to do that and get down on the road versus Ohio State and be involved in a track meet and expect to come back.
Greg, quickly, what does this game mean in terms of Ohio State's body of work? We know the committee loves them on the eye test scale, but this is a legit opponent. Real quick.
If they thump Penn State, there's no more questions to be asked about Ohio State. They're for real. We already know that.
Thank you guys for hanging out. College Football Live. For Greg and Lubes, I'm Marty. Y'all have an amazing day.